It is Friday, and it is another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. As always, I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. The Shift is brought to you by Iron Horse Bar and Grill, located on the corner of Null and 151st Street in Leawood. They have great drink specials running 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, and a reverse happy hour Sunday through Thursday, 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. So go on down to Iron Horse Bar and Grill, located on the corner of Null and 151st Street in Leawood. Marco, you know in the Simpsons intro, when Bart's writing on the chalkboard, like, I will not do that, just over and over again.
Yeah, the punishment.
I forgot what he's writing on there, but it's like, I will not do this, I will not do this, I will not do this. Well, I feel like that this morning, but this time I'm writing, I will never bet on a team that doesn't have an established quarterback.
Mm.
And I did that yesterday, and picking Taysom Hill and the New Orleans Saints, the banged up New Orleans Saints, to beat the Dallas Cowboys. And when I watched that game last night, it felt like from midway through the third quarter, through the end of the game, the Saints had no interest in playing that game. Zero. That was awful play calling, awful quarterback play. I mean, every time the defense for New Orleans did their job, got the ball back, turned it over, there's Taysom Hill throwing his second, his third, and his fourth interception of the game. I mean, a complete and total collapse from Taysom Hill. Now, I know he's this gadget guy where he can play tight end and wide receiver and running back and quarterback. And honestly, you could probably put him on the defensive side of the ball. But, hey, I apologize to the Dallas Cowboys. I didn't give them much credit for the team they still are. Their defense looked much better. You could, if you picked them in fantasy, they had to have gotten over 15, 16 points. They picked off Hill four times. And they won that game 27-17, and the offense didn't even look that good. Right, that offense for Dallas is still kind of getting back into rhythm. They had Amari Cooper, they had CeeDee Lamb, they had Dalton Schultz. Ezekiel Elliott still looked really hurt. I feel like I saw a funny tweet. It was like, everybody knows Ezekiel Elliott is hurt except for the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, he's still playing out there, and Tony Pollard clearly should be your number one back. He had the 56-yard run in the third quarter that really put the game out of reach. But that Dallas team was near full strength offensively. Their offensive line's getting healthier. Their receiving core's getting healthier. And that defense will get back Randy Gregory, I believe, next week. So Dallas is almost there. But New Orleans, now 5-7. No way they're making the postseason. Not with that team. Not with as many guys as they're missing. Not even Alvin Kamara is saving this team anymore. That was as frustrating as a team to watch as it was for me watching the Falcons a couple of weeks ago. Maybe that was last week. The weeks are kind of binding together now when they didn't score against the Patriots.
Oh, a couple of Thursday night games ago, the week before Thanksgiving maybe.
I'm starting to believe, I texted this to a couple of buddies last night, is the NFC South worse than the NFC East?
Ooh.
You have the Falcons, terrible. You have the Saints, terrible. And you have the Panthers, terrible. And the Buccaneers, with Tom Brady, control that division. I think, in terms of quarterback play, Tom Brady gets to face Matt Ryan, Taysom Hill, and Cam Newton, who's on his, what, second full game or third full game since missing the entire year? And if not Cam Newton, Sam Darnold? I mean, are you kidding me? I feel like the NFC East, for as much heat as I've given them, the rest of the media gives them. Washington's at least in the wild card hunt right now. Philadelphia stomped Denver a few weeks ago. Now, okay, I can give you the Giants. The Giants aren't a good team. But, man, the NFC South may have some five-win teams. All those teams have five wins. They are not what their record shows. Those are bad football teams. Very bad football teams. Not to mention Carolina just lost Christian McCaffrey. So, you know, they're going to maybe one or two more winnable games.
Mm-hmm.
The Falcons may have the best shot at being the second best team in that division, and that's not saying much. That's really not saying much. But the Saints looked just awful last night. Awful, awful, awful. And they haven't looked good since they beat Tampa Bay. and I still don't know how that happened. I'm going to stick with that they didn't have much film on Trevor Siemian, and he was able to expose that. But you give the Bucks another chance, which they'll get one, to face that Saints team, probably not going to be very close. The turning point in that game, though, wasn't a turnover, wasn't the 56-yard run by Tony Pollard. It was the drive where the Saints got near the red zone. They were down 16-10. It was near the beginning of the third quarter, and all they got was a field goal. When they got that field goal, they just cut the lead in half from 6-3. And then Tony Pollard gets that big run, and that's why you don't kick field goals in this league. They also punted from Dallas's 40-yard line. I know it was 4th and 15, but you know what? Guess what Dallas did? They didn't lose any field position. They at least got on your side of the field, and I believe they punted. But then you're pinned back. I've never understood why you should punt, even on 4th and 10, 4th and 15 from the 40-yard line.
Because
guess what? You don't convert, or you get a couple yards, they're starting at the 40 or the 35. Good NFL offenses can move the ball from the 10 to midfield. And apparently Sean Payton last night was down by 10 points, was like, oh, here's a good idea. Let's punt from Dallas's 40-yard line. Not even try a field goal. I know you missed a big field goal earlier, or a long field goal, but come on. The NFL is not what it used to be. You cannot play scared like that. If Dallas takes over, get a stop. If you trust your defense that much, get a stop. Punting down by 10 late in the third quarter from the 40-yard line, not your 40-yard line, Dallas's 40-yard line, is a surrender move. Waving the white flag, that's exactly what New Orleans did. And it's clear they should have much earlier, because when your quarterback throws, what was it, 3 interceptions in one quarter, you should be waving the white flag. The only team, and it happened in the span of a week, I've seen overcome that was the Baltimore Ravens, their quarterback throwing 3 picks in one quarter. But yeah, the NFC South, that is a very bad league right now, excluding the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't know, do you think they have an, do I have an argument here that the NFC South is worse right now than the NFC East?
They're record-wise, they're very similar, obviously. They kind of mirror each other with the bottom three teams, but I would think that, you know, Washington and Philadelphia, they're better than Atlanta and Carolina right now, which are the middle teams of the NFC South versus the NFC East. Each one's, could you say too that, and that each that the East has better quarterbacks than
absolutely.
The South?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, why didn't Trevor Siemian get to go into the game yesterday? Do you think they were? I mean, when you throw 3 interceptions at a quarter, can you really trust your quarterback to lead a comeback? Because it wasn't like the Saints were out of reach or anything. It just felt like that they weren't really trying to win that football game. I felt like they were more focused on giving Taysom Hill a full start rather than focusing on just getting the W for New Orleans.
Yeah, I think at that point you're just kind of, you don't want to revert back, right? You bench Trevor Siemian to get Taysom Hill. Then if you bench Taysom Hill to go back to Trevor Siemian, you're lost at that point. You have no quarterback play. You don't know who to turn to. Taysom Hill's their best option because though he threw 4 picks, he threw for over 200 yards and ran for over 100. I was completely wrong in my fact or fiction yesterday saying that the Saints would win that game if he threw for over 200 and then also rushed for over 50. Not even 100, for over 50. I also didn't anticipate him throwing 4 interceptions to Dallas. So he is their best option, and I think he was their best option to make a comeback, but you're right. I wouldn't have put him back on the field after he threw that interception to the Cowboys defensive lineman. I can't remember his name right now, but he had the big guy touchdown at the end. I mean, that's where I say, okay, it's 27-10. What was it? I think it was 27-10. You go, okay, that's good for me. Right, that's, you did your job today as best you could, but 4 interceptions is 4 interceptions. I'm going with the backup. We're going to try to keep you healthy, and we're going to roll Trevor Siemian, because Taysom Hill was banged up all day.
Yeah, I was going to say, even Brock Osweiler came in for Peyton Manning after he threw four interceptions.
And did really well. He played very well. Brock Osweiler took over in that game for Peyton Manning when he had, I don't know, I think he had six completions and four were interceptions. He was like 6 of 15 or 6 of 16.
Yeah, then he rebounds by winning the Super Bowl that year.
Still makes no sense. Because that was the time I definitely thought with Peyton Manning, I was like, that's over. Right, that his time is officially done. I don't know if we'll ever get a game like that with Tom Brady. Definitely won't get a game like that with Aaron Rodgers. I think we got somewhat close to that with Drew Brees, but that's because he had, what was it, torn shoulder, had a punctured lung.
Yeah.
Like, that's why he didn't look so good at the end of the year. Tom Brady never gets hit, and he stays so healthy that I don't know if he'll ever break down like that. We're seeing it this year with Ben Roethlisberger. Right, he's having games like that where he just looks like a total incompetent quarterback. Every quarterback goes through that. Now, Taysom Hill is a young guy, is a fit guy, should not be having four interception games. It happens. Lamar Jackson shouldn't be having four interception games, but it felt like every single one of those interceptions was on him. Underthrown, soft throws. I mean, you cannot let an edge rusher or a defensive tackle intercept your ball without tipping it up in the air. Right, he should not be able just to right there.
Mm-hmm.
Two hands on the ball. No juggling, just caught it. That's exactly what he did. On the ball to Trayvon Diggs. That was wildly underthrown. I mean, nowhere near his intended target. And maybe I'm being too harsh. He is a wide receiver. Right, he's a hybrid between a wide receiver and a quarterback. But at the same time, if the Saints trust you, which they do, because of the contract they gave you, you can't be having games like that, especially not with your season on the line. I always think the teams that pull off the upset win because they feel like their back's against the wall. The Saints last night did not play like they had their back against the wall. They played like, well, we'll eventually get them here. We'll eventually make a play, and they never did. They just shot themselves in the foot more. So credit to Dallas. Defense looked great. Offense still getting back to form. But I apologize to Dallas. I did not expect them to win that game. I tried to pick another upset, and here I am, like Bart Simpson today, writing on the chalkboard, I will never again bet for a team that has an unestablished quarterback, and the Saints have one right now in Taysom Hill. When we come back here on The Shift, we'll be going over our favorite Broncos games of the last decade and get to our three heroes of the game. You've been listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. As always, I'm your host Jack Johnson alongside Marco Marquez. The Shift is brought to you by Iron Horse Bar and Grill, located on the corner of Knoll and 151st Street in Leawood. Great scratch cooking, great live music, and the best place in town to watch your local team. So go on down to Iron Horse Bar and Grill, located on the corner of Knoll and 151st Street in Leawood. We've now reached the weekend. I know everybody's got to go through their work day, but we have reached Friday, which means we got some Chiefs football on Sunday. On Wednesday, it was three keys to the game. Yesterday, it was just getting to know the enemy and the Denver Broncos. Today, of course, we have three heroes, but we're going to do that right after this segment because this one, I feel like, is just a little bit more fun. Our favorite Broncos games of the last decade. Which ones you remember? Maybe for some of you, it's the Monday night or the Mile High Miracle with Joe Montana. Maybe some of you was in that 2000 to 2010 range. If you're a little bit newer, maybe it's in that Alex Smith era. Whatever the case may be, Marco and I have a couple we'd like to share, and I'm sure you remember all of them. If you've watched the Chiefs since you were born, these games are definitely the memorable ones. Now, when I was going over the head-to-head results, there were some ugly games. Marco brought up a great point on one of them. And I do remember it vaguely. Vaguely, because it was 2012. Kyle Orton was the quarterback. It was Kyle Orton versus Tim Tebow. And the Chiefs won 7-3. Dexter McCluster had the only touchdown of the game. Tim Tebow was 6 of 22 for 60 yards and an interception. Quarterback rating of 20. Kyle Orton had less than a 60% completion percentage, no touchdowns, no picks. So I guess not turning the ball over was key in that game. But that's just ugly. Ugh. Watching a football game that's 7-3, there was also that game in 2006 where the Broncos won in overtime 9-6. And that's with the old rules. So the Broncos didn't even score a touchdown. It was just they got a field goal and they won. Neither team could reach double digits. I mean, for as great as this rivalry is, that 2000 to 2012 span really wasn't much fun. There were some early games now in that early 2000 era. Okay, I'll go more 2005 and 2012. Weren't too many good games. You got Jake Plummer at times for Denver. At the tail end of Trent Green's career, you had Damon Heward.
Hell yeah.
Tyler Thigpen probably for one of them in that 2011, 2012 year.
Don't forget the great Brady Quinn.
Brady Quinn came in for Matt Castle at one time. I don't even know if he played against the Broncos.
He did, yep. He had a.
He did. Oh, was it that game in Mile High when it was a complete blowout?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The 38-3 game.
Oof. There are some bad offensive scoring games between the Broncos and the Chiefs. It kind of flipped, too. First, it was the Chiefs from, like I said, 2006, 2012. And then recently, it's been the Broncos with their multitude of quarterbacks. Right, can we even name all of them since Peyton Manning? It was Osweiler first.
Yep.
Case Keenum.
Yep.
Don't know if it was right after him, but I know Case Keenum was in there. Trevor Siemian was one of them.
Absolutely.
Drew Lock, of course. I know I'm not going in order, but I'm going to try to name all of them. So Drew Lock.
I'm smiling because there's one more you haven't gotten, and I can't. And
was it before Drew Lock?
Yeah, yeah. It was before Drew Lock. Another drafted quarterback by the Broncos.
Oh, Tim Tebow.
Ah, there's one more.
But Tim Tebow played the Chiefs, so he has to be in there.
You're forgetting about Memphis great Peyton Lynch.
Oh, or Paxton. Paxton Lynch. Oh, God.
Dude, I'm going through the scores from, like, past years, and I'm like, P. Lynch. Who the hell is P. Lynch? Oh, that's right.
He was built just like Brock Osweiler, too. Wasn't he a big, big, skinny quarterback?
Yeah, yeah, tall guy out of Memphis. High hopes that the Broncos had for him. Another experimental.
They traded up for him. I believe Denver traded up to get Paxton Lynch because there was rumors that the Chiefs were interested before the Broncos, and the Broncos went up, traded for him, and picked him. And that was the same year that I think that the Chiefs took Mahomes. Am I wrong?
I don't think they took Mahomes that year. I'll have to double check.
Or maybe it might have been the year before that. The Chiefs weren't specifically looking for a quarterback. They were looking for somebody down the road to learn under Alex Smith.
He was drafted in 2016.
Okay, so the year before Mahomes.
Yes. He only played in five career games for Denver. Oh. Made four starts out of those five times that he played. Yeah, drafted with the 26th pick. Thought he was going to be the replacement for a retired Peyton Manning. So let us not forget the great Paxton Lynch, who once...
Wasn't there... They also drafted Chad Kelly. You remember? Chad Kelly was
Yeah,
2017, and he never played. He was great in the preseason. And it was like, this is our guy. Finally, we've got our quarterback of the future. And then he got... I believe drunk one night and stumbled onto somebody's yard and got arrested for, like, I don't know, trespassing,
yep.
Breaking, entering. I want to say that it was, here we go. In December, wait, this wouldn't be right. In 2014, that can't be right if he was drafted.
Well,
Here we go. I got it.
Okay.
On October 24th, 2018, the Broncos released Kelly following his arrest on suspicion of first-degree criminal trespassing. He allegedly entered a couple's place of residence after leaving teammate Vaughn Miller's Halloween party. On March 20th, 2019, Kelly pleaded guilty to misdemeanor second degree criminal trespassing for the incident. He was also, which is why I got confused, he got arrested in 2014 following an altercation outside of Buffalo, New York nightclub when he fought with bouncers and resisted arrest. Criminal charges were dropped. So, did have a little bit of background trouble, but... The Broncos took him because he was out of East Mississippi Community College, right? He was like that big-time, like underrated quarterback, but everybody knew his name. the Broncos took him, and I was like, wow, that's actually not a bad pick. Then I think he played really well in the preseason, and then Von Miller's Halloween party got to him.
Yeah, and then, well, and the only reason they knew his name is because, you know, Kelly, he's had relations with Buffalo Bills great Jim Kelly. Yeah, so you were talking about the Broncos trading for the Paxton Lynch pick. It says they traded a first and a third rounder with the Seattle Seahawks.
Good Lord.
To get him.
It has been a struggle for Denver to find a quarterback. But anyways, on our favorite, we went off on a little bit of a tangent there, but for our favorite games, doesn't necessarily have to be during the winning streak that started in 2015. It just has to be within the last decade. Right, so number one, surprisingly, number one on my list is actually a Chiefs loss. But it was one specific play that was incredible to me. And it was in 2013, the season finale between the two, or the series finale, because they lost in Denver that year for their first loss of the season. Denver came back to Arrowhead. They flexed it to primetime. And Nile Davis out of Arkansas had that 108 kickoff return yard or kickoff return touchdown. And I was in the end zone he was running to. So you got to see the whole play unfold before your eyes. And that was Peyton Manning was quarterback of the Broncos. Alex Smith was there, obviously, first year for Andy Reid. But it was like that was the revenge game, right? Denver gave you your first loss. Denver had pretty much controlled the series for the last couple of years. And this was your chance to beat Peyton Manning. And it started off great. After that kick return, I believe Kansas City at one point went up by two scores. But then the Peyton Manning effect happened, and the Broncos came back. It came down to the final minutes, but then Alex Smith threw an interception in the red zone, and the Broncos were able to win that game. But that Nile Davis kickoff return, since I was there, the environment was crazy, one of the loudest games I've ever been to. And that kickoff return was probably one of the most electric things I've seen at Arrowhead, next to maybe Tyreek Hill's punt return on Thursday night against the Raiders back in 2016, I believe it was. But that's my number one. Who is your or your favorite Broncos game of the last decade?
Ah, man. There's just so many to choose from. I think it's got to be that the doink. Cairo Santos doink field goal in the Mile High game. Another Sunday night football treat that Denver and Kansas City delivered for us. Because remember, the Chiefs defense was playing so bad. Steven Nelson was getting burnt by, I can't remember the wide receiver.
Was it Demaryius Thomas?
Not Demaryius Thomas. It was another skin. It's not Cortland Sutton either. I'm going to go back and find the box score
on that. That was also the game. Didn't Philip Gaines get turned around once again, too?
That's and there who was it was. Philip Gaines, not Steven Nelson. Thank you. Gaines, man.
Philip Gaines ride.
Yeah, so he was, and the Chiefs were just getting, that was a year where the Chiefs defense was terrible at stopping third down.
Yep.
And like every time a team would have a third and long on the Chiefs, it was like, all right, just get ready for the other team to convert this. Like, it's going to be a first down either way. And that had happened. And the wide receiver's name was A.J. Derby. A.J. Derby had caught the reception, and maybe it was Emmanuel Sanders, actually. Maybe it was Emmanuel Sanders I'm thinking
that
of.
I feel like that's more likely.
Yeah, because Philip Gaines would have been on the number two there in that situation. But remember, Emmanuel Sanders caught the ball on third down. Philip Gaines missed, just blew the coverage on it.
Yep.
And Sanders went down and scored a touchdown, which essentially kind of benefited the Chiefs a little bit because they were able to get another drive, another offensive drive to force an overtime. And so they drove down the field, and the Tyreek touchdown with Chiefs had no timeouts left. They had to do a quick snap, and Tyreek Hill caught the touchdown.
It was right on the goal line, too.
Yes, and they had to review it, and the call stood on the field, thus sending the game in the OT.
Yeah, Denver fans were mad because if he was not in the end zone, I guess by rule it should have been the end of the game, but it's also unfair to Kansas because Kansas City didn't have any more timeouts. So he caught it right on the goal line, and it was like if he was down, the game would have been over because the clock would have kept running. But they stopped play, went and reviewed it, and then said he eventually scored. And then I think in overtime, correct me if I'm wrong, the Broncos got the ball first. The Chiefs got it then.
And this was the year where I think this was the first year of the new overtime rule,
So they went down, and I remember they were burning the clock. It was like, we're either going to win this game or we're going to tie. We're not going to give Denver another chance to get the ball back. And then Cairo Santos came on the field. It was, how far was the field goal? It was not very far. It was inside 40.
Yeah, it was a 34-yarder.
34-yarder. And when I saw that go up, it was headed straight for that left pile or the left upright. I was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. I have never wanted the Chiefs to ever tie a game, right? I think tying is the dumbest thing in sports. And it was headed right for that left upright. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. This is going to be missed, isn't it? And then it, you know, doinked off it. And Denver fans in the end zone, you could see they put their hands up like he had missed it. But it was more they were putting their hands up like, oh, you've got to be kidding me, like hands on their head because it went straight in.
Well, and it would have been a tie if he doesn't make it because that was 2 seconds left on the clock when Cairo kicked it. My mistake. I'm gonna get this wide receiver right. It wasn't A.J. Derby. It wasn't Emmanuel Sanders that scored that touchdown. It was Benny Fowler.
I couldn't tell you that.
Small receiver, just a speedy guy. Phillip Gaines blew the coverage on it, but it was 16-17 Denver, and all he had to do was just fall on the ground because Denver had they could just run out the clock up by one. But no, he goes, scores the touchdown, and then the Chiefs get the touchdown, convert the 2-point conversion. I think Demaryius Harris caught
Demetrius Harris. I think he did. I was just thinking about how I was like, who got the 2-point conversion? I believe he was in there because at the time, that year, it was everybody was like, don't throw it to Demetrius Harris because he's going to drop it.
Exactly. And the one time they needed him to step up, he did exactly just that. Wow. That was a game where the Chiefs, trying to find what their record was at the time of that game. But yeah, Phillip, listen to the names on this team. Raheem Nunez Roaches.
Oh, yep. Inside and interior. Defensive tackle.
Ron Parker, Phillip Gaines, Kenneth Acker. Jarvis Jenkins.
These are starters?
These were starters. Kendall Reyes. Man, this just
what? How far they've come from that moment. I mean, now you almost can recognize every single member of this Chiefs defense. Now, back then, I probably knew all the defensive players on that team because you watch them every single week. You eventually start to get familiar, even with the third string guys on that defense. But, man, aside from maybe who Derek Johnson was on that defense, Justin Houston's on that defense, Chris Jones is. And that secondary, I guess Steven Nelson's your best corner. Phillip Gaines being the number two corner is criminal.
Yeah.
Is criminal.
And that was a game for first place in the AFC West. I knew there was some meaning behind that game. Yep. Yeah, the Chiefs went up one game on them at 8-3. But, man,
that team being 8-3 is impressive. I don't think they get enough credit in those 2014 to 2017 years of just being underrated and how good they were, but the problem was they never could win in the postseason. Number two on my list of favorite games, this is probably a lot of people's number one in the Mahomes era. It was the Mile High game, his second game, because his first start came at Denver. But this one was his first true start, if you will, because in his first start, it was last game of the season, backups were playing, you know, there wasn't much to play for. That's just why he was starting over Alex Smith. This one was the left-handed throw game, and on the drive they absolutely had to have. They trailed 20-10 late into that game. It felt like, of our first loss of the season, it's going to be to Denver and Case Keenum. Right, the offense did nothing all night. They looked terrible. I don't think they didn't have a turnover maybe. They just were punting a lot. But then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, I think there was 10 minutes left. The Chiefs went down and scored. So it's 20-17. They get the ball back. Under 5 minutes, it was like, here you go. This is Patrick Mahomes' first opportunity in his career to show that he can lead a game-winning drive on the road. And I will still to this day, regardless how good the Denver team is, winning in Mile High, especially on Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, it is very tough to do. The altitude gets to you. It's loud. It's cold. And that's exactly what it was that night. But Mahomes gets the ball back, and he faces a third and five. Immediately on the snap, Von Miller just dominates. I think it was Mitchell Schwartz at the time. I think he just read the snap count correctly, so that may have been more on Mahomes, but got a clear path to Mahomes. Gets flushed outside. He's rolling to his left, right? And he knows Von Miller's right on his hip. So if he goes back with his right arm to throw the ball, that's a strip sack, right? Von Miller's been around the league forever. He's one of the best edge rushers of all time, or maybe the last couple decades. And he's right there to knock the ball down, game over. But somehow, this guy who has less than five career starts understands, I can't put my ball in the right hand. I got to go with my left hand here. And he just shovels it to Tyreek Hill with his left hand. He catches it right at the marker, and Tyreek Hill sort of shuffles right a yard past the first down. They then drive down the field. Kareem Hunt punches it in. You win 24-20. So that game to me was always and forever will be the game where I said, okay, this guy's going to be very special. He's not just going to be this statistical quarterback. We saw it in Pittsburgh, I think, the week before. You saw how great he was offensively.
Yeah.
Right? But everything was clicking. This was a night that things weren't clicking. And he had to do something spectacular. And it's on the road against a division rival. And you pull that out of your hat, throwing it with your non-dominant hand in a crucial situation. This wasn't like 27-13 Kansas City. It's third and one, and you just kind of underhand it left-handed. No, this was the game was on the line. If the Chiefs don't get this, they have to go for it. If they don't get it there, game's over. Or if you put it in your right hand, Von Miller has a strip sack. That forever will always be the game I think back to and think, that's when I knew Patrick Mahomes was special. So that's my number two favorite game of the Chiefs and Broncos over the last decade. Marco, your second favorite game.
Oh, man. There's just a lot of good ones to choose from. I mean, trying to think back, I thought I had gone to a game where Damon Huard had started and they beat a Jake Plummer Broncos team. I'm trying to think. It was
elite matchup.
Right, exactly. Exactly what you expect from an old-school Chiefs and Broncos matchup. But I'm trying to remember, that was the first time I had seen the Broncos in person. Maybe not a top game from the Chiefs and Broncos, but top memory. I was at the game. Can't remember who started on the Chiefs or Broncos side at quarterback, but the Jonathan Baldwin behind the back of the cornerback catch where he caught it on the back of the defender there. That game just always sticks out from memory for me. I'm trying to remember what, maybe it was a Trent Green and Jake Plummer game. Maybe Damon Huard came in as quarterback for it, but let's see. There's always been just some good moments if you're a Chiefs fan, but also just really bad moments as well if you're rooting for Kansas City sometimes. How could you not? I mean, we touched on it before. How could you not be a fan of the four-interception game where the Chiefs – that's where it all started, the streak of what we have now seen. How many times is it?
11, I believe.
11 times in a row.
Going for 12 on Sunday night.
Where the defense stepped up. It was more Patrick Mahomes, Peyton Manning playing bad than the Chiefs defense playing good, but they took advantage of that moment and just straight up smacked a Peyton Manning Broncos team where you forced him to get benched, and they had to bring in Brock Osweiler for the game, for the remainder of the game. But that game just will always stand out to me because that's what started – that was the game that started this run of 11 games where the Chiefs have just owned the Broncos. Quick look, you know, they're – and it's kind of – and it's helped them get the series lead over Denver – throughout the 122 times that they played him. The Chiefs are 67-55 against Denver, and that lead wouldn't be established without that game right there. So that's always just nice to see in this rivalry that it's like, oh yeah, not only do the Chiefs own the record for head-to-head matchups against the Broncos, but they're doing it by a wide margin too. And you just don't see the Broncos catching up with Mahomes, who's undefeated. The only team that he's undefeated against in the division, just giving up that lead anytime soon.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it from that point that game, why it was so sweet is that Peyton Manning just terrorized you ever since he went from Indianapolis to Denver. His entire career, he terrorized Kansas City, and to see basically the last time, I believe it was the last time they played him, he had four interceptions in the first half. And it was kind of like, man, this is kind of making up for all those years. Not really, but when you see a guy like that struggle One, you feel bad at some point because he is a Hall of Famer. He's an all-time great. But back then, when you're a Chiefs fan playing the Broncos, oh, it's sweet. And that's what eventually started this 11-game win streak. I think this last one, real quick, we can agree on. It was the Hungry Pig game, where Dontari Poe threw the jump pass to Demetrius Harris in the end zone in a blowout game in the fourth quarter. Looking back now, I'm not surprised that Denver was very upset about that play, because it's third down, you're near the goal line, a touchdown really. It does make it a four-score game rather than a three-score game if you don't get it and you have to kick a field goal, but being as creative to bring in Dontari Poe, a nose tackle, the heaviest nose tackle in football, to throw a jump pass might be a little bit much. But fun fact on Dontari Poe that sometimes we forget about, I think he is the heaviest man in NFL history to have a passing touchdown, a rushing touchdown, and a receiving touchdown. I mean, ridiculous. Do you think he ever thought about that when he was drafted in the NFL? He'd be lining up in the slot to catch a pass for a touchdown. He'd be lining up at fullback to run it in. Or he'd be lining up at quarterback to throw a jump pass. Right? Dontari Poe can now forever hang his hat on that. The heaviest man to do all three.
And that's why I'm saying, like, maybe we see that type of game this time around with the Chiefs and Broncos, where maybe the Chiefs let their foot off the gas pedal knowing Andy Reid, but also they might just mess around with Denver and just tool with them and do something like that where it's fun. And that's what the Chiefs need to do in this game against Denver. They just need to limit the turnovers and go out there and be yourselves. Go out there, and that's what they need to do the remainder of the season, because that's when this Chiefs team plays at their best, is when they have that swagger, that confidence, and they can go out there and just be like, you know what? We're going to let a 300 guy throw the ball, and he's going to catch a 300-pound guy throw the ball, and you know what? It's going to be a freaking touchdown. That's what they need to do in this game. It's like, all right, we're gonna do this play, and you know what? We're gonna freaking score on you because you're Denver and you're absolute trash.
I mean,
you're our little brother.
I mean, right now, the last 6 years, that has been the case. Denver hasn't won. They've been the one team that has not been able to overcome Kansas City in that offense. But we'll see if another one is in store on Sunday night. Before we get to break, real quickly, as promised, we will do our three heroes to the game. Number one on this list, I do have Nick Bolton, the rookie out of Missouri. His name has been a little bit quiet over the last couple of games, but I feel like if Denver is going to establish anything on offense, it's going to be through their running game. Right? If Melvin Gordon, who has been banged up a little bit, he was 50-50 on his chances of play earlier in the week, I think he's going to be good to go. Nick Bolton's going to have to be the guy to step up and stop that. Right? He is going to be the one that can make life difficult for that Denver running game. Javonte Williams, another guy for Denver that they'll have to slow down. And I'm putting the pressure, the amount of expectation on Nick Bolton to be the guy to step up and slow down the running game. I think he can do it, which is why I have him as my hero of the game, or one of the three. Here's the game. Number two, this one's kind of out of left field, Mike Hughes. He just now took over as the punt returner for Mecole Hardman. Don't know how often Mecole Hardman's going to be involved in the offense this week. It seems like his snaps are dwindling, and now the one thing that he was always the starter at no longer is. Byron Pringle's the kick returner. Mike Hughes now the punt returner. So I do have him as my second hero because I think the Chiefs are due. I think the Chiefs are really due for a special teams touchdown, and I think it's going to be thanks to Mike Hughes. I think Mike Hughes gets a big punt return touchdown on Sunday night. Very bold take, but I feel like he's there for a reason. The Chiefs are high on him. Now, he did have that fumble in Vegas, which was a stain on his special teams, I guess, special teams look. But people forget on that fumble, he was a tackle away, getting past the punter from scoring. So he's pretty explosive, and I think we're going to see an explosive-type play on Sunday night. And lastly, I got Travis Kelce. Right, Travis Kelce seems to always dominate the Denver Broncos. I don't see them having an answer for him on Sunday night. Patrick Mahomes is going to go to him a lot. I wouldn't be shocked to see Travis Kelce get somewhere between 7 to 8 catches for 105 to 110 yards and a score. Right, Travis Kelce doing what Travis Kelce does. And one of those things is dominating the Denver Broncos. So those are my three heroes to the game. Nick Bolton on the defensive side, Mike Hughes on special teams, and Travis Kelce on offense. When we come back here on The Shift, we will preview tonight's matchup between the Kansas Jayhawks and St. John's. That'll be a road game for KU, and finish up with some fact or fiction. You've been listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. The Shift is brought to you by Iron Horse Bar and Grill, located on the corner of Knoll and 151st Street in Leawood. They have great drink specials running 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, and a reverse happy hour Sunday through Thursday, 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. So go on down to Iron Horse Bar and Grill, located on the corner of Knoll and 151st Street in Leawood. College basketball is back tonight if you are a KU fan. I know you may have watched college basketball games on your own, but the Jayhawks will finally return to action tonight on the road for the first time this season. They've played at neutral sites, but this will be their first true road test. They'll have two of those in the non-conference schedule. They'll have Colorado here in a few weeks, right around Christmas time. But this will really be the attempt to make a step forward if this for your defense, right? Bill Self has been very critical of this Kansas defense early on, and I don't blame him. They looked terrible in that tournament down in Orlando, both in the Dayton game and the Iona game that they won. So if you are going to take care of business tonight, you cannot have a performance like you did in those last two. All right? St. John's is not Iona. Iona's a good team. But if you play that way against St. John's, you will lose again. And I'm not sure what the crowd will be like. I know it's not going to probably be the same as what Boulder will show when KU goes down there. I mean, KU and Colorado, they have history. And KU's played there before, and it was a rowdy environment. I don't know if St. John's will be as rowdy as Colorado, but still going to be a tough place to play. I mean, it's your first true road game, and it's Kansas, a top 10 team coming to your place. So if Kansas comes out flat, they're not wanting to guard, I'd have them on upset watch. Right? They could be on upset watch if they defend the way they've been defending. They also need to find some way to get David McCormick involved, but not too involved where they're force-feeding him the ball down in the post. Get him involved naturally. We all know David McCormick needs to play better. I'm no genius for saying that, right? I'm not finding some player that's not playing up to standard, and I think he can play better. I don't think David McCormick can be the best player on this team. I'm not even sure he can be the best post player on this team. What he can do is be valuable when he's on the floor, blocking shots, getting rebounds, not missing the bunnies that you have right around the goal. Right? If David McCormick can give you 8 points tonight, 7 to 8 rebounds, pair of blocks, you're not turning it over, maybe you knocked down a few free throws, I'll take that. I will take that every single game from David McCormick. As surprising as it may sound, the scoring can come elsewhere. You got Remy Martin, Ochai Agbaji. You got guys off the bench. Christian Brown's been playing great. Mitch Lightfoot can come off the bench and provide some solid depth. Right, David McCormick doesn't need to be uber special. He just needs not to make too many mistakes. And one of those games, he's finally going to break out of it, just like last year. It took him probably a month to really get comfortable. And he just needs his confidence. It's always confidence with David McCormick. You get that confidence up, he's going to stop missing the bunnies. Because right now he's short-arming it a little bit. It looks like he knows that everybody knows he can't make the bunny. Right? Kind of a pressured situation from when it really shouldn't be. If you played sports, everybody has it. It's baseball. Right? Maybe you're a pitcher and you got the yips. When you know that everybody knows you can't throw strikes, you tend to press a little bit more. Maybe in football, if you know that everybody knows that you can't catch the football, you're not feeling as good on the field. You're like, don't throw me the ball. I can't catch it. In basketball, maybe it's free throws. Maybe it's layups. Maybe it's taking care of the ball. Right? That wears on you. For David McCormick, it looks like it's all mental with those bunnies. Because he should be a guy that should be dunking those. And when he does that, you'll get the confident David McCormick back. Let's see if it can happen tonight. Because when that happens, KU's going to go on a run. For years under Bill Self, playing through the post is a big part of it. And when your post isn't doesn't have to be dominant, but a consistent player, KU doesn't make it very far. You need to have reliable guys from your front court. Mitch Lightfoot has given better minutes this year than David McCormick. And he knows he needs to step up. Right? He's not naive. He knows he needs to play better. This is his senior year. You can only give seniors that long of a cushion, really, to play well. Or a buffer. Right? If you're struggling five games in, it's like, okay, time to turn it on. Some of these guys, the experienced ones, they've been playing fine since game one. Ochai Agbaji, one of those guys. He hasn't missed a beat since game one. Christian Brown started slowly, and now you can see he's getting better and better each game. Remy Martin, slow to start the year, getting better and better. Jalen Wilson and David McCormick are at the point. Now, Jalen Wilson's only had, three games under his belt? Right, he may get two more games before you start saying, all right, it's time to start seeing something. David McCormick, tonight's the night. Right, you are going to still get that criticism if you're not playing up to standard because you are the starting center for Kansas basketball. You have to, at some point, elevate your game. He knows it. Bill Self knows it. He's even said it. Right, he knows that there needs to be more production from David McCormick. David McCormick knows, I need to give more production. This Kansas team is incredibly loaded. They're incredibly talented. There should be no excuses for not reaching the Final Four and or the national title game. You have some of the most experienced players in the country. You've got four stars coming off the bench. Right, I think this team at most is losing five games when you look at it all the way around. Now, there will be some upsets. You'll slip up, you'll have bad games. But this is a team that you can't have excuses for too long, right? You lose to Dayton, you got to bounce back and win multiple in a row. You got to show that you are one of the top three, top two teams in the country. Right now you're ranked eight. You got to get back to that point. And it can't fully happen until David McCormick becomes a valuable part of this offense. I think it'll be closer than maybe some expect tonight. Yeah, St. John's only a 6.5-point underdog. It tips off at 6 p.m. on Fox Sports 1, over-under at 156.5. Right, St. John's, they're not bad. They're actually better right now offensively than Kansas, at least in points per game. They're averaging 87.3 points per game. Now you'll probably say, okay, it's based off opponents, so I will say, actually, I'll go back on that. I think Kansas has the better offense, but St. John's can score. Shooting over 50% from the field. They're a much better free throw shooting team, and we know that is one of Kansas's biggest problems right now, free throw shooting. And they're right around the same three-point shooting team as Kansas. So defending, that's the big key tonight. Can you stop St. John's in their home stadium? Number two. David McCormick, you got to play well tonight. I'm sorry. That is going to be my key until he eventually does. Because everybody knows that's a problem. Free throw shooting and David McCormick not playing up to standard. They get both those tonight. I think Kansas will win this game. But again, that'll tip off at 6 p.m. in New York. Kansas, ranked 8th in the country, a 6.5-point favorite against St. John's. With that, it is now time for our favorite segment of Fact or Fiction. 5 questions. 5 takes in under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
All righty, Jack. First, fact or fiction, the Saints draft the quarterback in the 2022 draft.
I did think about this last night, and is Jameis Winston going to be coming back, and can you trust Jameis Winston coming off a knee injury? Right? How long do the Saints want to be in rebuild? Because if you draft a quarterback, depending where you draft, you're going to be in a little bit of a rebuild. You got the weapons around him to make your team good. I mean, look at New England. New England drafted Mac Jones, and now you look, they look one of the best teams in the AFC. The Saints, though, they can't roll next season with Taysom Hill or not even Jameis Winston. I think, yes, they are going to need to draft someone, whether that be in the first, second, or third round. Go get your quarterback for the next couple of years. So fact on number one.
Free agent quarterbacks, top five, Roethlisberger, Fitzpatrick, Dalton, Foles, and Newton. Fact or fiction, David McCormick has a double-double tonight.
I just can't expect that much, right? I don't need a double-double. Like I said, 8 points, 8 rebounds, couple of blocks, no turnovers. I will absolutely take that from David McCormick, but I don't want to be too positive right now. I still need to see a little bit more before I can make a prediction like a double-double. So fiction, I don't think David McCormick gets a double-double tonight.
Fact or fiction, the higher-ranked team wins all conference championships.
Okay, so starting with the SEC, that would be Georgia.
Yep.
Right, in the Big Ten, that'd be Michigan.
Correct.
Okay, in the Big 12, that would be Okie State.
Yes, sir.
And the Pac-12, Oregon?
Yes.
Okay. Man, all four of the major conferences.
ACC would be Wake Forest, too.
ACC would be Wake Forest. See, okay, so all major five. I think in the AAC, too, the American, I think Cincinnati is playing Houston. So.
Yep.
That's too many. That's way too many conference tournaments for just every single top-ranked team to win. Somebody's going to slip up. Probably Georgia is – I don't predict Georgia too, but they're playing Alabama. You can't ever just rule out Alabama. I think Baylor and Oklahoma State's going to be close. There's going to be a lot of great games this weekend, both on Saturday and on Sunday. But I think fiction, not every single top-ranked team is going to win in the conference championships this week.
Fact or fiction, Nick Bolton has a sack on Sunday.
You know, I would like to say yes, but the problem is that Teddy Bridgewater gets the ball out so quickly.
Yeah.
Right? He does not wait for his receivers to get down the field that long. So I'm going to go fiction on that. I think Nick Bolton's going to have more of an impact in the running game, stopping the run, that is. But if there's going to be a sack for the Chiefs, I'm expecting Frank Clark or Chris Jones or Melvin Ingram. The three best guys on your defensive line, that's who it's going to be, but not Nick Bolton. So, unfortunately, fiction on that.
And lastly, factor fiction, the Chiefs are the only team in the AFC to get a win this week in the NFL.
Okay, so...
Did I say AFC? AFC West.
AFC West, I'm going to be fiction on that if that's the case. So, Kansas City's got Denver. I think they'll beat Denver. So, there's one of your teams. The Chargers play Cincinnati, correct? I don't think the Chargers win that. And then the Raiders, it's going to come down to the Raiders in Washington. You know I'm not very high in the AFC West, so I got to stick with that formula. I'm going to go fact. I think Kansas City increases their lead because every other team in the AFC West will lose this week. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll be back on Monday at 10 AM. You enjoy your weekend and the game in Kansas City.